Welcome to Dreadful Digest, where we look at your favorite horror novels and rip apart their adaptations. I'm your host, Tessa Nelson, and I am joined by my friend Guillermo. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. So when reaching out to you, you said you wanted to cover something sci-fi because that's one of your favorite genres.
Yes. Yeah? I am very much a big fan of science fiction, whether that's more like older traditional stuff or even new age stuff
too. Okay. So are you like a fan of Dune and stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So when I gave you some suggestions, I think Annihilation obviously is the one you chose, but I think I would also put out The Thing as an option.
Yeah,
and
I remember
Frankenstein.
That one.
Mm-hmm. Why did you want to cover Annihilation over those other options?
I think if I remember correctly, you gave me that like big batch of options. They all sounded pretty cool to me. Big, like a lot of stuff I was already a fan of. Frankenstein was one of the very few books I read like in high school that they made us read that I actually liked and actually reread by myself. The other one, The Thing, it's hard to find somebody who's not a fan of The Thing, especially people who are like already like in that space. Like I think like our friends and everything. And then
our fans love The Thing. Yeah. That's a big, yeah.
It's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
And Annihilation was a very interesting one that I was not expecting from you at all. And
oh, really?
No, at all.
You didn't know it was based on a book?
Well, that's for one, but I don't really hear people talking about it.
Okay.
And I was already a fan of it. Like, I had watched it maybe a year or two back. And without giving too many spoilers, there's just really pivotal scenes or, like, really, like scenes in it that just kind of, like, stick with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so those were the ones that, like, okay, I kind of want to do that one because nobody else seems to talk about it. And I would love for other people to know about it.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely know like in the horror space, it's kind of a popular movie. But I don't think a lot of people know it's based on a book or like it's like a trilogy of books. Mm-hmm. So I was very excited. It was one that I've been wanting to dive into because, I mean, the cover looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
For starters, it's like the 10-year anniversary covers are really cool. But also I just love diving into trilogies or like books that have, like a movie adaptation, but there's a bunch of books, in the series as well that like maybe people haven't heard of before. So yeah, is there, anything you want to say about the book or the movie, that might get people interested in watching it or reading it without spoiling anything?
I think it's great introduction to like sci-fi literature.
Oh, really?
Because my main like background and experience with science fiction hasn't really been books. It's mainly been more like visual media. So whether that's photos, videos, or movies, TV shows, things like that. Like I grew up watching like science fiction shows.
Yeah.
And that's why it's kind of nostalgic for me because I, you know, saw things as a kid and then like I would make like little stories in my head or like I would make little comics or drawings based on science fiction like scenarios.
Yeah.
So getting introduced into something I already know, but in like a different medium, I think this was great for that.
Okay. So it's kind of making you want to read more sci-fi
books. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I thought books were lame.
Okay. Well, we're trying to show people that, you know, there's a lot of media out there to explore. And audiobooks are a great avenue for that.
Oh, yeah.
For me personally, I have a hard time listening to audiobooks. Like, I need to visually, like, have the words in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, everybody's brains work differently. So,
you know what I was thinking when I was, like, reading? Because I read it along while listening to it. Because, like, I can't really that's why I didn't like audiobooks for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
If I just listen to it, I get distracted in whatever else I'm
doing.
Exactly,
yeah.
So, but it kind of took me back to, like, elementary school where like everybody was reading the same book and like
the teacher's reading
yeah
so
it took me back
along.
To that time I'm like this is how I should have been reading for the past like what's ever since I got out of school.
It helps it helps you get through it way quicker I feel like, especially if it's I put it on like 1.5 speed.
I tried that. I was just like it was going way too fast.
Really?
I wanted to like I tried it for a little bit.
All right, my non-spoiler review. You might hate me for this.
Why?
I did not like the movie. I watched this movie years ago, probably two years. That sounds about right for me too. And I didn't. I think the ending is. It gets me every time. And it's just, it's not my favorite thing. What's the director's name?
Just call him the director.
Alex Garland. Alex Garland, yeah. Who also did 28 Weeks Later and 28 Days Later and all those movies. Same guy, yes.
What the heck?
Yeah.
Am I just a fan of him and I don't even know it?
I think so.
What?
I think you might be.
That's crazy.
But yeah, it's just like, from the movies I've seen of his, the endings don't always land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've also watched Men. I don't know if you've seen Men.
I haven't seen that.
I don't. Yeah, that might ruin your streak a little bit.
Okay.
It's like an interesting movie, but mm-hmm. I vibe with the rest of the film except the ending. And then reading this book, I was like, this is what I wish the movie was.
Okay. Wait, non-spoils, right?
Non-spoil. Yeah.
Okay. I like the movie. I understand why people don't like it. I get why people don't talk about it,
mm-hmm.
but I also get why, you know how YouTube shows like just clips and scenes from certain movies? There's just like, realistically, there's like two or three scenes from the movie. It could have been condensed way shorter.
Oh, yeah,
or
definitely.
It should have had scenes like swapped out for things from the book.
I think it could have used a lot of character development. I think that's something that could have filled out that time, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of stuff with the main character and her husband, which we'll get into, that kind of maybe filled in a little bit of the film. But outside of that, like, we don't know anything about anyone else.
I like the movie, but I agree with you, book way better.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad we're in agreement mm-hmm. then. Let's dive into the synopsis. So if you have not seen the film, please go watch it and then come back. So biology professor and former soldier Lena is under interrogation. That's how the film starts. She's the only survivor of the latest expedition to a zone known as the Shimmer. The Shimmer emerged 3 years ago and has been gradually expanding. Many expeditions were organized by the Southern Reach, but only Lena's husband, named Kane, ever returned home. Kane cannot explain where he was and how he came back, and his condition quickly deteriorates. Lena calls an ambulance, but she and Kane are intercepted by security forces and taken to a secret facility. As Kane is put into intensive care, psychologist Dr. Ventress prepares a new scientific expedition into the Shimmer, and Lena volunteers. Three other women participate in the expedition: Cassie, a geomorphologist, Anya, a paramedic, and Josie, a physicist. The expedition encounters mutated plants and animals, including deer, alligators, and bears. Oh my! At an abandoned Southern Reach base, the group finds a video message from Kane's previous expedition in which Kane cuts open another soldier's abdomen to reveal slithering intestines. Very cool. At night, the base is attacked by a mutant bear that drags Cassie away. Later, Lena later finds her mutilated corpse.
Sorry. Later, Lena. Pants on fire.
Later, Lena. Within an abandoned village, Josie studies plants that have taken on a humanoid form and theorizes that the Shimmer functions as a prism, distorting everything that falls within its boundaries, including human DNA. Anya, overcome with paranoia, disarms the other members of the team and ties them to chairs, accusing Lena of murdering Cassie. The mutant bear then returns and lures Anya away by emitting a cry of help in Cassie's voice. The bear kills Anya while Josie frees herself and shoots it. Ventress, at this point, leaves the group and heads for the lighthouse on her own. Josie allows herself to then succumb to the Shimmer and, quote, refract into a humanoid plant, so Lena's kind of on her own. Lena follows Ventress to the lighthouse, where she discovers Kane's remains and a videotape. In the footage, Kane kills himself with a grenade, and after the explosion, a doppelganger of Kane steps into frame. Within the hole created by... Oh, there's a meteor that happens at the beginning that crashes into the lighthouse. There's a meteor.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it causes a hole. Anyway, within the hole created by the meteor, Lena finds Ventress, who explains that the Shimmer will eventually swallow everything. Ventress then disintegrates into a shimmering cloud thing. I don't know what it is. That absorbs a drop of Lena's blood and changes into a faceless humanoid being that mimics Lena's movements. Lena tricks it into igniting one of Kane's grenades as it transforms fully into her doppelganger. Lena then flees the burning lighthouse and the shimmer dissipates, destroying itself as it mimics the explosion. Back in the present, Lena learns that after the shimmer fell, Kane's condition began to stabilize. Lena visits the Kane doppelganger and asks if he really is Kane, which he doubts. He asks if she is Lena, but she does not answer. They embrace and their irises shimmer. And that is the end of the film. Alrighty, so that was the film synopsis. So you ready to get into the book research?
Yeah, it's like I just saw the movie.
Yeah, I visualized it for you, right? Yeah. I made it so detailed. Mm-hmm. So the book was published in 2014. It is the first book in Jeff Vandermeer's Southern Reach series. The idea for the novel was sparked by a vivid, disturbing dream where he saw a subterranean tower and a monster writing luminous sermons in bioluminescent fungus. He later incorporated exact wording from that dream into the novel.
That's crazy.
I was wondering where I got that from because it seemed very like, I was like, did he incorporate that from other pieces of literature? Mm-hmm. Like, it just seemed like it was from something. So that's really
cool.
It was
from a dream?
I guess so.
Do you remember your dreams?
Very rarely. And if I do, they're like, not fun. They like, suck.
Do you think you would be able to remember one to write a whole like?
I would not be able to remember words like that. Like that seems very detailed. The St. Mark's Lighthouse that he visited also inspired the one in the book.
Cool.
Vandermeer embraces a surrealist method with writing. He uses the subconscious imagery as raw material, then refining only what makes coherent narrative sense. He wrote large parts of the early draft with bronchitis, which is probably where those crazy dreams came from, working in a haze that produced whole passages he didn't remember writing and had to decide what to keep or cut. So that makes a lot of sense. That's one way to write. Actually. Yeah.
Everybody has their own way to like write.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's valid. I should try that. Gets very sick and then write. All right. His aim is to destabilize familiar symbols, like showing the lighthouse not as a beacon of safety, but as a sinister, unsettling place. Mm-hmm. What I found interesting, and we're going to be getting into spoilers, obviously, because I just spoiled the whole movie for you guys. But what I found interesting was that, you know, in the movie, her goal is to get to the lighthouse, basically. That's kind of like what their quote-unquote mission is.
Yeah.
But in the book, it's kind of like just a second set piece. Like, it's not like the main set piece.
You don't even spend that much time in there.
No. No, I was very surprised. I thought that was going to be, like, the main focal point because I watched the movie before reading the book.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. Wait, so you watched the movie before going into the book?
Yeah, because I watched the movie a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And then, so I kind of remembered bits and pieces of it. I remember the lighthouse. That's, like, the main set piece mm-hmm. in the film. And then so going into the book, I was like, oh, we're talking about the lighthouse already. I think it's one of the few, like one of the first things that she talks about. Mm-hmm. And it's like where all the other expeditions, that's their goal is always to go to the lighthouse for some reason. But for her, the tower is like the thing that interests her most.
Yeah.
And so I found that very interesting how the film was like, actually, we're going to make the lighthouse the focal point. But in the book, it was like, actually, no, that's not why we're here. That's not why she wanted, the biologist wanted to be there.
But they didn't even, in the film, they didn't even mention any sort of like tower from the book or tunnel, which what it actually was.
That's why I think when I was writing my notes, it was so hard because the book and the film are so different. Mm-hmm. Like he keeps the essence of it, Alex Garland, mm-hmm. he keeps the essence of the story. But as for actually, like, I wrote so much notes. Like, it was a lot. And then I was trying to, like, write what the tower is. And I'm like, is anybody going to understand what I'm talking about? Because mm-hmm. even reading it, I'm like, I can visualize it, but it's still very hard. And even, like, sorry, I'm talking a lot. No, I really like the book. Mm-hmm. But on Reddit, I was, like, reading people's opinions about the book. And they also were saying, they're like, I really like it. Do I understand everything that's happening? No. Mm-mm. But it's kind of just like you just read and you go for it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think the tower is one of those things where I'm like, when we talk about it, are people going to know what we're talking about? I don't know.
It's going to be a lot of people are not going to understand it. A lot of people are going to ask questions about it. And that's going to make them want to read the actual book.
I hope so.
So I think we need to set some ground rules for the audience who doesn't know anything about it. I think a good reference point would be when we say tower or refer to the tower, mm-hmm. it's actually a tunnel that's kind of that they discover in the beginning of their expedition into I think in the movie it's called the Shimmer.
Yes.
And then in the book they call it Area X.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Area X.
Yeah, and one of the ways to kind of visualize the tower is like a underground bunker, but like it's just kind of, I mean, I imagined it literally like a tunnel, like going down with different layers or levels.
Yeah.
That's how I imagine it. And the deeper you go, the more there's like the cryptic writing, and it's just gets weirder and weirder the more you go down. That's how I imagined it.
Yeah.
But that's not a set piece in the film at all. So you kind of just got to use your imagination a bit.
Two things I want to mention. I envision it because from what I understood, it was like a spiral, right? Like a spiraling staircase.
That's how you imagined it. Okay.
Yeah. And then in my head, I was thinking of it almost like another lighthouse, but just upside down.
Ooh.
So that's what I was going in my head.
I like that.
Because if I remember correctly, like she kept wanting to explore down, like, and she was like feeling the walls and everything. And then they found like the little, like the slug trail thing. And then we could talk about that afterwards. But the other thing that I want to talk about was that I forgot the other thing.
The tunnel, there's the crawler.
That was freaky.
Yeah.
I wish they had that in the film.
I know. There's a lot of things. Yeah.
Oh, I remembered. In the film, they once they actually reach the lighthouse, they kind of go into like this weird, like dark abyss. And remember that thing?
The meteor hole. Yeah.
Is that what that was?
That's what it's supposed to be. Yeah. That's what Wikipedia said.
I feel like that could have been their version of the tower.
That's what that's kind of what I was imagining too. For some reason, I thought when I was rewatching the movie, I was like, oh yeah, surely she goes up the lighthouse and explores more, but she doesn't. She stays in that first level and then checks out the meteor hole. But for some, I was like, why didn't she go upstairs? I don't know. Because I guess I was like, in the book she does, but not in the movie, I guess.
I don't. You know what? I'm going to say it. I don't like how they took advantage of the lighthouse. I think there could have been a lot more there in the film.
You wanted there to be more with the lighthouse?
Yeah. Or? I feel like they spent way more time outside of like the location, the key locations.
Okay.
Because they spent, in the film, they spend a lot of time of like showing Area X / Shimmer, like the nature side of that thing. And like, that's cool. But I kind of want it more for like the readers of the series, you know?
Yeah. Even when they visit the headquarters, it's very brief.
Yeah.
Continuing on with the book research, in the book, one of them is called Authority. The biologist is described as being of Asian descent, and the psychologist is mixed race and half indigenous. In 2018, the Media Action Network for Asian Americans and the American Indians in Film and Television advocacy groups accused Garland of whitewashing. Portman has responded to the controversy, saying that she did not know her character had a specific ethnicity until whitewashing concerns were raised, and that Garland had intentionally not spoken to Vandermeer about the other two Southern Reach novels because he wanted to focus on adapting Annihilation. So basically, when this book came out, there was only the one, and then Garland adapted it 2 years later into a film. He did not ask Vandermeer about the other sequels in the book series.
He just
wanted to focus on this story. Well, we'll get into more of like his method, but so he did not know much about the characters and what they were doing after the fact. Mm-hmm. And so, I haven't read the other two books. Mm-hmm. I want to. And so I had no idea. Because in this book, they don't, like, give any characters...
anything.
Like, any character descriptions of these characters at all. So we don't know what they look like. They don't even have names. So I was like, oh, that was very interesting.
Did you like that, though?
I did.
Really?
I did.
I think more books should do it.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to keep track of, like, characters with, like, specific names and, like, things like that. I'm like,
I'm just like, we know their job titles.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Did it leave you any more disconnected with the characters?
No. And that's the thing, is because we follow the biologist and she explains, like, why they don't know each other's names. Because they believe that it's going to deter from the mission.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I buy it. I feel like that makes sense. So you're not like emotionally connected, because when you have a name, then you feel emotionally connected to that person, even just a little bit more. And I was like, okay, I buy that this government agency or whatever would do that. Mm-hmm. I'm down with it. And honestly, I feel like there is more characterization with this character than the movie does.
No, I agree. I mean, I freaking love the book a lot more than I thought I was gonna. Because like the movie, it's very cool. I like the world, and so I was excited to go into the book because I'm like, okay, it's more of like more of the movie.
Yeah.
And it kind of blew my expectations out of the water. Mm-hmm. I was not expecting the thing that where it's like, oh, we don't have names for our characters. We're just their job titles and that's it.
Yeah.
I will say it was a little difficult in the beginning, like remembering who was what, like whose job was what.
In
the book?
Oh, really?
Like in the beginning. But then like as you read it, once you get to know the roles of like and the personalities of each character, because they play more roles than what their job title is. The biologist is more than just the biologist.
Yeah.
The psychologist?
Oh, a lot
way more.
Way more
than the
She's
psychologist.
She's got a lot going on. She's
she
crazy.
She needs a psychologist.
She does. She does. And even like, so there's the biologist, the psychologist, mm-hmm. the anthropologist, and the surveyor. Mm-hmm. There was a linguist who didn't pass training. We don't know what happened with her. Yeah. She didn't go on the mission. But those are our four female characters. Mm-hmm. It is the first mission with all women mm-hmm. that are going in. They are not... the surveyor was a soldier, or she was trained. So she like understands weapons and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so those are our four characters. And like you said, we know their personalities. Like mm-hmm. the anthropologist is more passive,
yeah.
a bit more scared. The surveyor is, she's like, she reminded me of the character in the film that ties them up.
Yeah.
Like that's who I was kind of envisioning mm-hmm. when reading her. Like she's more hot-headed.
Yeah.
Definitely got that soldier mentality.
Yeah.
And the biologist is very interesting. We'll get into all her background and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But so those are kind of like our main characters in the book. And mm-hmm. I just found them way more fascinating. Mm-hmm. I guess because you spend more time with them than you do in the film. You're kind of quickly introduced to them in the film. And I think Garland does kind of keep some of their personality traits, like with the one that becomes a plant.
I liked her. I liked her a lot.
She gave the anthropologist vibes a little bit, like being more passive. So I feel like he does take some of their personality traits, mm-hmm. but I definitely think the biologist has more development. She has more of an arc.
By far.
In the
Absolutely.
Book. Yeah.
I do think, though, if I'm remembering it correctly, the movie kind of takes time saying goodbye to like the other side characters. The book, from like almost one moment to the next, says bye to each
like
one
dying,
of the characters.
Like not,
I was
like,
not expecting that at all. I'm just like, oh, I kind of like them. I wanted to hear more about them.
I know.
And then one of them gets like their dome, like, I'm just like, dang.
Yeah, they die in brutal ways for mm-hmm. sure. Speaking of the film, let's get into the research. Let's learn a little bit about Annihilation. Produced in 2018, directed and written by Alex Garland. Alex Garland is a British novelist turned screenwriter turned director known for 28 Days Later, Ex Machina, Civil War, and Men. I want to know, if you ever watch Men, I just need to know your reaction because it's a trip for sure.
I didn't know those were all by the same guy.
So he did like all the... He did the 28 Days Later, and mm-hmm. then he produced 28 Weeks Later. He wasn't really part of the creative team. And then he worked on 28 Years Later. Diving into the production, the screenplay was crafted when only the first novel existed. Alex Garland deliberately avoided contacting Jeff Vandermeer about later books in order to focus on the source material at hand. In addition, Garland didn't reread the novel, so he read it only once and focused on capturing its tone and dreamlike quality rather than literal plot fidelity. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Why it has some of the elements, but other than that, like the plot is very different. The events are very different. The film stars some big A-listers, including Natalie Portman, Oscar Isaac, Tessa Thompson. And there were some other people, but those are the main three that I wrote down. Inspirations for the visuals included electron microscope imagery, lichen, mathematical formations, mineral growths. The film's final psychedelic sequences emerged from this concept art process. And that's what I have for the film research.
Cool.
Are you ready to dive into
I have a lot to say.
The book versus movie?
Yeah.
All right. Let's dive into it. So, like we mentioned, the characters in the book do not have names. They go by their job titles, which include biologist, who is our main character, anthropologist, psychologist, and a military-trained surveyor. In the film, they have names and different job titles. Lena's the only one with the same job, although she was also a former soldier. As Guillermo mentioned, they changed the area in the movie from Area X to the Shimmer. Don't say which one you like yet. That's going to be a question for later. But the film starts off with Lena having survived the Shimmer, returning to the mainland and being interrogated. In the book, it starts with us immediately in Area X as we are reading the biologist's field journal. That's what the book is supposed to be. She also decides, spoiler alert for the end of the book. There's going to be a lot of that. We're going to be jumping back and forth because it's very hard to stay linear because, like we said, the book is not like the movie at all. The biologist decides to stay in Area X at the end, so she does not return to the mainland like Lena does.
I would have stayed too.
You would have stayed in Area Absolutely. X? Wow, why?
I think I have like a lot of biologist. I've understood a lot of her background, especially when it came to like learning about like biology and kind of like documenting and discovering, especially imagine going to like this unexplored area where things are kind of like brand new and like you don't know what you're gonna find next. I absolutely love that.
She has a lot of curiosity.
Oh yeah, curiosity. And especially when she was talking about like that pool from her like childhood.
Yeah, I liked that.
That was great. And I saw myself seeing like I would do that. Like I would just spend hours in the backyard like examining like the little animals, the little plants and bugs, and sometimes I still even do that when if I have the time. But to be given that opportunity and kind of explore that more, sure, I'd stay. Maybe not forever.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, sure, I'll Might stick around. Well. What's the worst that could happen?
Well, a lot could happen as we see. A lot of bad things can happen. But so you're the type of person that if given the opportunity to go to space, you would do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, God. Heck no.
Yeah, absolutely. No way. This biologist, I don't think she stayed because of curiosity. No, she didn't.
No.
Right?
She, well, this is part of her arc, right, is at the beginning of the film, or at the beginning of the book, you know, she talks about her relationship with her husband and how he's the one that's more emotional and open, and she has a really hard time with that. We dive into her parents and how they were kind of neglectful, and she spent a lot of time at that pool looking at biology, studying all that. And so she spent a lot of time alone. So when, you know, she's with her husband, you see that disconnect there. A lot more than you do in the film. And so her whole arc, this whole journey is like her realizing like I could have, you know, she says something really, I'm going to butcher the line so bad, but she's like, I could have met him halfway. I could have like, and that alone shows her, her having more of an arc than the film version
than the one
ever
in the
could.
Movie.
Yes. Yeah. And her deciding to stay, like, yes, there's a curiosity factor, but it's also like, oh, she wants to kind of follow in his footsteps almost. In the, sorry, we're like jumping all over the place, but I'm very excited. So in the film, it's kind of implied that, oh, she wanted to go into, it's not implied, it's very stated that she wants to go into the Shimmer because she wants to see what her husband saw and learn from that. But in the book, it's like, no, she wanted to do it just because she wanted to.
Just because?
Like, it wasn't, her husband wasn't the main reason that she wanted to do it.
She stated it wasn't the main reason. I would be willing to argue because by the end of it, as we all know, she wants to go and, like, see what her husband saw. She wants to.
Yeah.
I'd be willing to make the claim, this isn't a sci-fi story. This is a love story.
Yeah. And with two characters that we don't see really interact.
Not really at all. But it's a great love story because she's willing to go through all that because she knows chances are she's not going to see him again.
Yeah.
Like at
all. She knows he's probably dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she still wants to, she still misses him so much that she wants to like follow like along and see the things that he saw in his like assumed final moments. Like that is more, that tugs at your heartstrings a lot more than the version in the film. Version in the film, it's kind of just Oscar Isaac being weird. And like Natalie Portman like being super serious.
Yeah. And she was much more of an emotional character in the film. In the book, she has a very hard time being emotional and even just saying I love
you. Expressive.
Expressive, yeah. She keeps it all in herself. Mm-hmm. And in the film, it's like she's grieving the loss of Kane, because at mm-hmm. this point, at the beginning of the film, she's like, he's been gone for a year. She doesn't think he's coming back. She doesn't even know where he went. And so it's her grieving and kind of shutting herself off from everybody. Which is its own interesting story, but I feel like we've seen that with female characters a lot. And with this, it was like the roles were kind of reversed in a mm-hmm. way where it's like, oh no, the man is the more emotional one. The woman is the more closed off one. And I felt like that was an interesting take.
I want to throw an observation out there. This will be a question to you. Did you happen to look into what the definition of annihilation means?
Like the actual definition?
Yes.
Or no.
So, Emerson, what do you think annihilation means? Okay. So, from what I could tell, or from what I gathered, annihilation for most people means absolute, destruction mm-hmm. of something from 100 to 0, right? However, within the field of physics, annihilation means, from what I can tell, and I'm no physicist, I'm a biologist. Is that it's the concept of that every single type of particle has its opposite particle. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So there's I believe protons, electrons, neutrons, those types. They have their opposite, direct opposite particle. So annihilation is when you have the regular particle with its antiparticle, and when they collide, it creates, through the process of annihilation, an outburst of energy. And so that's in reference kind of like to E=mc², that matter, energy cannot be created nor destroyed.
Okay.
So thus the energy.
So it's actually not destroying anything.
It's not destroying anything. Mm. It's converting or transforming the energy. And a lot of the stuff that you mentioned right now, based on the relationship of the two main characters, of the biologist Lena and Kane and the biologist's husband,
mm-hmm.
I see so many similarities there of them as characters and people, but also kind of have those particles.
Like opposites.
Exactly. Yeah. So being those opposites. And so it's like, what's going to happen when they collide, when and if they collide?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Yeah. Keep that in mind, because that absolutely blew my, I think I learned that halfway into the book, and it kind of changes things on how you perceive it.
Okay. Because I was only, their version of annihilation, mm-hmm. what that word means in the book is different than in the film.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's what I was going to dive into, but I did not actually think of the definition of it.
I was just looking it up because I'm like, that's a word you don't hear too often.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
but it invokes a lot of powerful imagery.
When someone says, I absolutely annihilated that pizza, they didn't just eat it all. They just converted its matter and energy.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, that kind of works with the film version of Annihilation too.
That's true.
It's technically not destroying anything, like Lena says. Mm-hmm. The shimmer is just changing things to fit whatever mold it wants to fit. Like, it's not like... Mm-hmm. From the outsider's worldview,
mm-hmm.
this, the shimmer is scary and imposes a lot of threats, but it's also, it's not doing anything with the purpose of being evil. It's just, changing things. We don't know where this comes from, but it's just changing things and not in, it doesn't have evil intention.
Well, you're right. It's just, it's force of nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a tsunami. It's like an earthquake. It's not necessarily good or evil, but it's just a natural thing.
Exactly.
Which is weird because it looks anything but natural, especially in the film, because they actually get to visualize some of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so I did. That one plus for the movie is actually seeing, what some of these monsters, or not monsters, but these mm-hmm. animals form into and stuff. I definitely think seeing that visually is very cool.
My favorite,
that's where Garland's a master at that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good at that.
I really like the flower people. I don't
yes.
know. There is such. I would put some of those in my garden if
those
I could.
Okay, there's one thing that I was mm-hmm. a bit confused in the book is when they pass by the little homes or whatever.
Yeah.
Inside, I don't know what she was describing, because I thought I was like imagining the human plant people. But I'm like, I don't think that's what they were. Like, were I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't. When she goes into like the abandoned areas, like the abandoned neighborhood.
Yes. There's like something inside the buildings that like grew, or like kind of looks like an explosion, maybe. I can't.
There was a
the
lot
words.
In the book that it was like it would describe for a good sequence, and I'm just like,
Yeah.
When it described the crawler, that was like that was an example of something where I'm like, okay, I have to really reread it.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't sure what I was looking at, or even like when they found the body of the who was the first one that died.
The anthropologist.
Anthropologist.
Yeah. Well, I was just, I brought that up because I was like, maybe Garland got inspo from those houses and when creating the human plant people. Because in my mind, I'm like, oh, the humans that lived there previously became plants or animals in the book. That's what I assumed. And in the film, it seems like they definitely leaned into like the humans becoming plants or like kind of the animals changing and morphing. So I feel like he might have been inspired by the plant people from the, I don't know.
Think about it this way. You imagine you had to make the movie now.
I don't know.
You read it once. You're on par with them. You're on par, your level. So
that would be tough.
Yeah.
That'd be tough. Because I was like, well, me and my mom watched it. And she was like, how did he describe what happened at the lighthouse in the book? I'm like, he didn't. That's just a director writer concoction like that. But there's a lot of stuff in the book where I'm like, I don't know how you adapt that. Like,
that's why they didn't have the crawler.
Yeah.
That's probably why.
Probably. I mean, yeah, we'll get into the crawler. But yeah, so still at the beginning in the film, Lena, like I said, was a former soldier and is currently a biology professor. In the book, she was not a soldier, but we know she's a biologist who is kind of bored by her regular job. In that she decided to volunteer for this mission. Her husband wasn't the main reason for her to join the expedition.
Supposedly
is what she said.
Yeah. I did love in the book that they were, it started off with them just there.
I agree.
That was a way better introduction as opposed to the movie.
Yes.
The movie was just like,
Yeah.
There's a lot of buildup, and then for what, you know?
That's what I wrote down in the film. We see Lena's life before entering the Shimmer. We learn her husband was a former soldier. And that she's still grieving the fact that he never returned home. But and then we also see when his doppelganger comes in and starts coughing up blood and all that stuff. So we do get all that at the beginning. But in the book, yeah, like you said, we're literally just thrown into it. Like this is her field journal. We don't get the whole like them crossing into the border. We don't get the 4 days journey of them going to base camp. There's a base camp in the book, unlike in the film. And so we're literally just plopped into it like, okay. We're going to start exploring now.
That's
not
how
wasting
any
time.
That's why I really enjoyed the book, because I don't really, when I do read, it's mostly just adventure books.
Okay.
Like I read for the adventure. I read for the new world. I read for like exploring. This had a lot of it. That's why it's so great. The film, however, they did do some exploration, but not nearly enough as compared to the book.
Because yeah, a lot of it is they hang out for a good chunk of it at the Southern Reach headquarters beforehand. Dr. Ventress is explaining what's going on.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's definitely like a movie thing.
Yeah.
You know, you got to explain what's going on. But yeah, it would have been, I'm trying to imagine a movie where they like, they just throw you in and you figure things out as you go. I think that could have been really fun to explore. So in the film, Lena doesn't know her husband was sent into the Shimmer. She just knows he's being sent on a secret mission and he's being super sus about it. In the book, they actually discuss that he's going into Area X months beforehand. And it's kind of like an area where they're butting heads a bit. She doesn't really want him to go, but she's also not expressly saying that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she's like, this is a conversation they've been having. She knows what's
going on. There's no surprise.
Yeah, there's no surprise at all.
And they were already like the, well, she was part of the 11th expedition.
Right, yeah.
In the book. And then her husband was the one right before it.
Mm-hmm.
So like they knew people weren't coming back.
Yeah, because he was the only, his group was the only one that had actually returned.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a suit. I'm going to blank this out, but it's a side mission, basically.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, there's a high chance I'm not going to return after this. And so I think, yeah, that's probably why he did not want to say anything in the film. But in the book, it makes sense for her character to be like, okay, have fun, bye, I guess.
The movie, though, I loved how they did kind of like the reveal or like the investigation as to like her husband and that group.
Mm-hmm.
Because they did like that really found footage that stuff.
Yep.
That was crazy. And I it's like you're investigating it with them. Mm-hmm. And then like they put you kind of like behind the little screen of the camcorder, you know?
Yeah.
And like it's like, ooh, it's spooky. Cause like you don't know what, like who held that camcorder for you. And that's, I think that's a little bit different as opposed to like finding any other types of clues.
Yeah. Cause later on in the book, they find all those field journals from previous expeditions, and she's like, oh, crap, there weren't just 11.
No, there's
we don't know
more.
How many there were, but they've been doing this for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously, you know, you can't have a film where she's just reading. That's only works for a book. But yeah, I think the camcorder edition made a whole lot of sense. Yeah. It was a good edition. I will say, how are those camcorders still working?
They work.
How are their batteries not dead?
Well, I don't remember what type of camcorder it was, but this is a question for you, and if you don't know, feel free to let me know. But do you know how long the time was from one expedition to another in the movie?
That's a good It must have been pretty soon after. Right? Well, because his expedition was like a year, and then he came home, mm-hmm. and then within a few weeks, she went on the next expedition, is kind of how I'm thinking. So we don't know when the footage was filmed.
Yeah.
But still, how long can a camcorder last?
I'm trying
it's
to
not
think,
a big complaint.
Like very
I just no, found no, it no. funny.
Because it wasn't tape. It was digital.
Yeah, it was digital because they had the SD card.
Yeah, I want to say
I thought
yes.
they did.
They had the SD card, or at least for the cameras and stuff in the book too.
Yes. Yeah, that was because that's the thing in the book is they're not allowed to bring in outside, like newer technology.
Yeah.
No, they didn't do digital. They had to do, they actually had to use film, right? Because they had the tent, the dark room.
Mm-hmm.
To
I was confused about that because they were talking about developing the photos.
Mm-hmm.
But then I could have sworn they said something about SD cards. But I found it very funny because the whole time I was reading like up to those points, I was telling Angelique, like, why aren't these people like using cameras?
Because
I don't think prior to that, did they make any mention about cameras?
What I remember about why they did not want to bring in new tech is because it distorted.
Oh.
And it also distorted the area around them. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of affecting the environment.
Yeah.
And so that's why they had to bring in old tech and old film cameras. And that's why they could not send footage back to the mainland. That could have been a lie.
I think it
I
was
don't
a lie.
No, but yeah, that's the reasons I remember.
I think it's a lie for two reasons. I think it's a lie, one, for morale, because they don't want like the abominations and like the crazy stuff that happens in that weird zone to kind of like get out and like influence the next expeditions. That's one reason that I'm thinking of. The second reason would be that going back to kind of like the idea of the zone being like a prism, where it kind of like disrupts things.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, absolutely. If you bring in that new tech, you don't know how that's going to disrupt like the natural flora and fauna.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how it's going to react with like the stuff that's already in there.
Yeah.
Because as far as I know, like with just the basic stuff that's already there, that's making a whole lot of things that like it's making nightmares out of that.
That's why I really want to read the sequels, because I'm like, what is the intention of Southern Reach? Because if they never get anything back from these people, any field journals, any photos, what are they even learning about this place?
They don't need to know anymore because, and this is what I'm thinking, they're not there to investigate or stop it. I think they make, the biologist makes mention in the book, she thinks that they're just there to feed it, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they're just throwing expedition after expedition after expedition. Oh. They're kind of just feeding it and hoping that, I don't know what they're hoping for.
Yeah, that's a good theory. Because I mean, there's definitely some little bit sus intentions from the Southern Reach, because it's like they've lied to them this whole process.
They gave them like guns that were like super old too.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah.
So it's, like they're not setting them up for success at all. Not. Either that or they just don't have the funding behind them.
Yeah, which is like crazy because this is, you know, it's expanding.
Oh, yeah.
And you would think that they would want to stop it, but maybe they don't. So in the film, Kane, we see, is coughing up blood. Mm-hmm. His body is deteriorating. He's not doing so good. But he does live by the end of the film. In the film, he is also the only one from his expedition to return home, the only doppelganger to return. Mm-hmm. In the book, the whole crew, his whole expedition, returns home, but as doppelgangers, and they all eventually die 6 months after that from cancer.
Yeah.
So obviously, the substance they're made from is not doing so good in the real world.
Yeah.
So, but they kept the doppelganger stuff. I was surprised.
I like the doppelganger idea.
Yeah.
And then I'd also do like that they don't live forever after that. Mm-hmm. Like there's almost like an expiration date.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like they're in the real world. Yeah, they're dealing with the pollution and all that stuff.
Well, not let alone that, because if you make and this goes into my background as a sci-fi fan, but everybody knows clones live less than their original counterpart.
Mm.
Because when you make a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy.
Oh, yeah.
So it deteriorates a lot faster. Clones age a lot faster. I don't know if these are direct clones, but it makes sense for them to, you know, get cancer and then pass away. Because what is cancer? It's just the uncontrolled multiplication of cells. So if they're constantly, if they're from the area X, if they're from the shimmer, if they're from the zone that's used to kind of like taking what's around them and kind of multiplying and reproducing based off of that, then yeah, it makes sense. Once they get out of that, they don't really know what to like take influence and reproduce from anymore.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe they're just copying from themselves over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that causes a cancer and that's why they're...
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to read this. I really want to dive into like people's theories and stuff. I know when reading the little section at the beginning of the book, like the little foreword, Karen Joy Fowler, she mentions how, you know, this is a commentary on obviously climate change and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it makes sense like that these characters, these doppelgangers would not survive outside of that.
Deforestation.
Bad. Not good. We do not condone.
Forestation is good.
Forestation is
Plant
good.
Plant more trees.
Yes. So there were some scenes added to the film that are not in the book, including the scene with the big-ass alligator in the swamp.
That was nuts.
Very sick.
And then freaking Natalie Portman just laying down fire, like, from her
gun.
Like, what?
Yeah. And then, like, examining the teeth and stuff. Yeah. Like, I think that shows, like, just how morphed things are in this world. Because when they first walk in, it's like, ooh, it's all pretty and, like, it's beautiful and you can very get... You can get lost in it, in the beauty. And then you see stuff like this and you're like, there's danger at every corner. Mm-hmm. Like any step you take, you could be killed, basically. Yeah. Like it's, you do not mess with nature. Humans are not like the main predator.
No,
in this
they're
world.
Not the top of the
top
the
of the food chain. Yeah. Yeah. They also added a scene where they visit the old Southern Reach headquarters and they watch footage of Kane cutting open the stomach of another soldier.
Yeah.
And you see all these creeping, like moving intestines.
Yeah,
it's very creepy. I really liked that scene. I was not expecting that. And like it's basically it's showing that this like the shimmer is affecting everybody. As soon as you walk in, you're basically already starting to get affected.
Yeah.
And I think that is a bit different than in the book, because in the book, the biologist is affected, and so is the psychologist. I'm not sure if the anthropologist was affected or if the surveyor was. Mm-hmm. She was getting a bit more, like, paranoid by everything, so maybe that's a way. But
I don't
like,
think that's, like, the shimmer, though.
Yeah, or, that's, like, the Area X, whatever it is, whatever. But, like, yeah, I think that this film kind of highlights that, like, as soon as you go in, like, you're going to be altered in some way.
Yeah, like, it's more airborne.
Exactly.
In the book, it's kind of like you have to be in direct contact. Like
you have to ingest something.
Had, like, the fungi, like, little little organisms.
She
like,
ingested the
interface.
Spores,
yeah.
And she was like, I'm not going to say this to anyone because they're going to kick
told
me
anybody?
Out. No, because it'd be like a zombie apocalypse. I'm like, I'm...
28 days.
Yep, it keeps coming back. It keeps coming up. There's also a cheating plot in the film. How do you feel about that? That's not in the book at all.
I didn't like it. I felt like it added unnecessary drama.
It really didn't add anything. No, yeah.
I didn't feel... Because, like, they introduced it so early, I think. And, like, I wasn't yet... I didn't care for the characters, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Show me more alligators and bears. And
yeah, stuff. Literally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the film, speaking of, we see them face off against mutated animals, including the iconic bear that mimics voices. Yeah. Really cool. I think that's probably the best scene, honestly. And the creature looks so cool.
Yeah.
In the book, we witness animals that might be mutated, like the dolphin with human eyes.
Yeah, I think freaky.
That sticks with me. Like she sees these dolphins going upstream.
Yeah.
Like in a, not even at the ocean, like in a river or whatever. Yeah. Like they're where they're not supposed to be. And
there are some dolphins that.
Really?
Yeah, in the Amazon. I think they're pink dolphins, but there are dolphins that go in rivers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So she sees these dolphins and she thinks that they might have human eyes and they look very familiar. I kind of read it as like, maybe that was her husband.
They hint to that.
Or something. I wasn't like making that up, right? Basically, the idea is that the humans that were living there or that, you know, the people from previous expeditions might have become one with nature, might have become animals. In the film, it's like they might become, you know, plant people. But in the book, it's like, ooh, maybe you could become a dolphin. There's also, I wanted to mention this.
Yeah.
In the book, there's the creature that moans late at night. Remember that?
Yeah.
We don't ever see it. It's not ever described. We just know at a certain time at night, it starts moaning and being really creepy. And it almost, at the end of the book, kills the biologist. But yeah, we never actually see it. Would you have liked to have seen it?
In the film?
Or just in general, or like have it be described? Because in the book, we don't get a lot of mutated animals. I feel like when you think of the film, like that's like the thing people remember the most, like the bear. But in the book, that's not like the main focal point, I guess.
I think it's kind of like how it is in the real world. In the real world, when people talk about like, oh, hybrids and like, you know, like crossbreeds of like animals and things, they kind of think of like over-exaggeration of like versions of animals. But in reality, a hybrid is like what, a mule?
Yeah.
So it's like
doesn't look that crazy.
It's technically has the DNA from these two different animals for two different species, but it's like, oh, but it kind of looks the same.
Yeah.
Like you expect it to grow wings or something, or like horns or something. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like the book does it a little bit better and keeps things a little bit more grounded, more in reality.
More subtle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas the film, it's like, okay, now's your time to like go crazy. Go crazy with the mutations. Go crazy with like the things that like the flower people and all that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great because it's a visual medium.
Exactly.
This is a lot more of a slow burn. It's a lot more, like you said, subtle. And I think it lends itself better that way. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the descriptions, they're kind of like, they're not direct descriptions. It's not like, oh, it looks exactly like this. It kind of, it gives you from the viewpoint of a biologist, of the biologist.
Yeah.
Like there are some descriptions where she doesn't know how to describe it. She doesn't know what she's looking at.
Yeah.
And I think those hit a lot harder, or arguably just as hard as like the one in the film, like especially the bear, especially like the alligator.
Yeah, because, I mean, you literally have to use your imagination to try to envision what this thing could look like. Mm-hmm. I kind of was wondering if the boar on the cover was supposed to be what it is, or a pig or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's kind of how it was in my head, but I don't know if you had a different idea about what that was.
I was a little disappointed because that's the first encounter that they have with like a...
Something weird. Yeah.
I was like, oh... Like, because I watched the movie before it, and I'm like expecting, oh, it's gonna be like the bear. It's gonna like be super huge and like be half like melted skin off and everything. Yeah. No, it's just kind of like a boar. Like,
Maybe we don't know.
Even though everybody be careful, boar are dangerous. They will mess you up.
Yeah, definitely. It almost messes up.
Like reality is a lot scarier than anything from fiction. I think. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in the film, Cassie is the first person to die. She dies by bear.
Yeah.
In the book, the anthropologist dies. And this is where we're going to get into a whole lot of changes.
Yeah.
Here's some book info. I have a whole paragraph.
Go for it.
So the psychologist hypnotizes the crew using trigger words. That is not in the film at all. Mm-hmm. She hypnotizes the anthropologist to enter into the tower, like we mentioned. And it's basically a huge bunker, underground bunker thing with a bunch of different layers. And the biologist is obsessed with this tower.
Yeah.
Inside the tower, there is writing on the walls that are created by spores and infect the biologist. So she starts kind of changing and morphing throughout the book a little bit. She has heightened senses, stuff like that. There's also this thing the biologist calls, she nicknames the crawler, and it's writing these never-ending phrases on the walls. And basically, the psychologist, through hypnotism, forces the anthropologist to take samples from the crawler. She does this at night when the other two in the crew are sleeping, and this causes the anthropologist to get killed. We don't know how, but she's dead. The biologist and the surveyor, they find the anthropologist's body in the tower, and they're like, oh, shoot. The psychologist is crazy. Yeah, and the psychologist is like, they know I'm crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to run to the lighthouse.
Yeah.
And that is a lot of book info I just threw out, you guys. Mm-hmm. Also important to note is that the spores that infected the biologist also made her immune to further hypnotism. So that's how she knew that, like, the psychologist was doing this to the crew. Mm-hmm. And her body can kind of heal itself.
Like she had, like, heightened senses or abilities.
But she was also shot later, and it was starting to heal itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, and you still wouldn't stay in there?
Pretty sick, honestly. I would take it. They know going into the mission that, like, the psychologist is going to hypnotize them to basically make them feel calm. That's what they're told, right? And then she realizes, oh, shoot. Like, no, she has more nefarious intentions. She can basically control us with just a few words. And I think the psychologist in the film, she doesn't have any nefarious intentions. She knows that she's going to die because she has cancer, and that's why she wants to go in. So she doesn't necessarily care whether people live or die. But she's also not...
She's not evil.
She's not evil. She's not leading them to do dangerous things, mm-hmm. like, without their, you know, their willingness. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Do you have any thought? Which version of the character do you think you prefer?
I think the one from the book is a little cheesy with the hypnotism thing.
Okay.
I think I'm like I don't really buy it. It helps the story go along.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're like, oh, like, jump, and then they're like, okay. Like, I don't buy hypnotism. I don't believe that. But the one from the film, I like a little bit better.
Okay.
I think she's a little bit more personally invested because she has that kind of, like, ticking time bomb in her already, like, dying body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, why not go out with the bang? Yeah. Why not go in there?
Yeah, it makes sense. But she also kind of seems like, or at least the actress portrays her as not really thinking there's a way to solve this.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of just wanting to go in there and see what's going on. Yeah. But I think she's kind of given up hope for not only herself, but like in order to stop the shimmer. That's kind of the version of the character I took from that. Let's jump over to the lighthouse.
Oh my God.
So in the book, the lighthouse looks like a fight had taken place. There's like bullet holes on the walls and stuff, upturned tables. We don't know what happened with this fight. We don't know why it took place. On the upper levels, the biologist discovers a photo of a lighthouse keeper, keep that in mind, and also journals from previous expeditions. She finds her husband's journal and learns about the doppelgangers and that so the doppelgangers were created in the tower.
Yeah.
And he literally sees them walking out, like his whole crew of doppelgangers walking out of the tower. And then he writes it in his journal, like, oh shit.
And then
this is crazy.
They're dead.
What was that?
They think that they're dead when they see, like, they see themselves somewhere else. And
Think
that they're dead.
They think they're the dead ones. Yeah, that was trippy. She discovers that her husband also decided to stay in Area X and explore and try to, like, maybe find a border or something just to see, like, how far it goes. There also is not a meteor hole or confirmation of aliens like there is in the film. That was definitely, I don't know. I think I don't like the alien idea. I think that's just boring. I like the idea of not knowing how Area X started. And maybe there's more explanations in later books. But as for this one, I'm like, I don't care to know how this started. Like, it just started.
Yeah.
Do you like knowing like how this might have started?
I don't need an explanation.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, whatever case, throw me a cool idea of like this weird zone where weird things happen. Sure, it's kind of interesting about, because I'm much more of the notion of like exploring things, not necessarily knowing the answer to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. I don't need to know the answer to every single little thing, like how it started, where was the biologist born, or like I don't need to know all that. I'm much more invested in the present and the now and like what's going on now.
Mm-hmm.
So when they introduced, and I think that's kind of like a theme in the book, they don't answer all the questions. They don't, and frankly, I just don't think they need to.
Yeah, I thought like the introduction of aliens was kind of, I didn't like that as being the reasoning,
it's like that
honestly.
One meme, it's like aliens.
Yeah, literally. I was just like, I didn't really need that, honestly. Yeah. Even, and all they had to do was take out the shot of the meteor hitting the lighthouse. The
because it's all sequence. Yeah, pretty much.
They like, then the rest of it could have been like, I don't know what's going on. But yeah, I don't know. Not my favorite thing. So in the film, the psychologist ends up dying because it turns into that blob. At this point, I kind of stopped caring about the movie.
Yeah.
But in the book, she jumps from the higher levels of the lighthouse when she sees the biologist coming from the forest or whatever.
Yeah.
And she thinks that the biologist is a flame. Like she sees the biologist as a flame, and it kind of hints that like, oh, the psychologist is also being infected in her own way by Area X. So because she sees this flame person, she jumps from the lighthouse and it breaks all the bones in her body and stuff. So she's slowly dying. She also uses the word annihilation as a trigger word to try to make the biologist kill herself.
Yeah.
So the meanings for the words are different from book to movie. Mm-hmm. In the book, it's supposed to make someone commit suicide. In the film, that's just a word she uses just to describe what the shimmer is going to do.
Yeah.
It was kind of just like, we need to add the title in here.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it felt, at least for like just kind of adding it into the script.
The movie could have been named something else, I think.
It could have been.
It didn't have to be called Annihilation at all.
No, no. That's why I'm like, I want to know. Did he get this book on his desk and he liked it so much, but also apparently not enough to want to adapt it that well?
Not enough to read it a second time.
He's like, this is cool, but I can do better. And I'm like, but could you do better? I don't know if he did do better.
I think if they need to get together.
Jeff Vandermeer.
Yes, and I think they need to
work
get
on
together,
a new one.
Make the second book and then let him handle the like the visuals for like the abominations, the mutations, and like the atmosphere.
Yes.
And then he can handle all the writing.
That's my thing with Alex Garland, as I feel like he is a better director than writer. His writing just doesn't work for me, at least from what I've seen. Kind of like a Zack Snyder type, where I'm like, you are an incredible director, but maybe you should
let someone else write.
Let someone else write, please. Yeah. So by the end of the film, the shimmer actually gets destroyed. She blows that doppelganger up with the grenade, and then the rest of it kind of just flames out. Like, I don't
like it crumbles.
It crumbles. Yeah. She sees like the trees outside the lighthouse like falling apart, and we're told by the scientists at the end, like, oh, the shimmer is destroyed, which is like, okay, I'm glad that worked out,
I guess. That's all they needed?
That's all they needed
to
do.
They just need a grenade?
All
they
these
could have bombed that from, like,
way
far away.
You would think that, like, you know, if this is run by the U.S., that would have been the first thing they do, is just bomb the place.
Yeah.
that's what you could have done.
They did not have to send so many expeditions.
No, don't study. Just bomb.
Jeez. Don't study, just bomb.
Just bomb. In the book, Area X does not get destroyed. The biologist goes back to the tower, and she actually goes to see the crawler.
Yeah.
Because, like we said, she has an insatiable curiosity. She wants to see what this thing looks like. The crawler is very hard to describe. Mm-hmm. It's constantly morphing, but it's vaguely human. try reading that section. It's a nightmare.
It's a doozy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It also almost drowns her, but she survives and notices that he has the face of the lighthouse keeper. Mm-hmm. So did the lighthouse keeper become this crawler thing? Perhaps. She also goes deeper into the tower and finds what might be... that finds something that might be similar to the Area X border. That's what it reminds her of. Mm-hmm. It's like this white square, almost. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I was envisioning it. But she tries getting closer to it, but she can never quite get close to it. It feels like hours have gone by and she can't get close to this thing. So she decides to leave the tower, and eventually, following in her husband's footsteps, she decides to stay in Area X. And yeah, that is how the book ends. So she does not return to the mainland. The Area X is still thriving. Very different
as
endings.
As it should be.
As it,
as it should.
You support Area X taking over
I'm
the world.
I'm pro Area X.
Okay. That'll
Z,
be your political
Area
campaign.
Y, bring them all.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, one of the last lines in the book, she says something along the lines of like, she's not coming home. She's not going home.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, she already is home.
Yeah, she's never really felt at home.
No.
Like, I can't remember what the husband did as a job, but he was
a medic.
Okay, he was a medic.
I think if I remember correctly, he was a med. He worked like as a paramedic, but I think they brought him onto the expedition because he was specifically like an army medic or military medic, something like that.
Yeah, I couldn't remember like what his specialty was. I just know that they moved to the city for his job,
mm-hmm.
and she felt out of place. She never really liked it there,
mm-hmm.
and she found comfort in this one like space of land that was like a some land that hasn't been bought up yet.
Yeah, it was just a lot.
Yeah, an empty lot. And she would go like late at night. She would tell her husband, "I'm just gonna go on a walk," but she would go to this like plot of land to just observe the insects and fauna and flora that live there, and that was like her one secret, her one safe space.
She's living her best life.
She's living her best life in Area X. That's all she wanted.
I think that she's just like a like one of those nature girls. She just wants to. She just needed a hike.
Yeah, she just needed a hike.
Yeah. And like when she was telling her husband about like that one like little plot of land that she would go back that like as she was older with her husband, when he would question her, I think she said something like, "Where like, don't worry, I'm not cheating on you. Like, it's just." I'm just going on walks. Like she just wanted that time or like that space for herself.
Yeah, she didn't show him where it was or anything. Mm-hmm. She just was like, he questioned like why she was always going at the same time every night. And it's like, no, she just wants to look at some bugs. That's what she wants to do.
Is that? I think maybe that's why they didn't put a name to these characters. I think that might embody every type of biologist. I think maybe every biologist
wants
to look at some bugs and animals
could relate to this
some
character
plants and flowers.
I really think that there was a lot of interesting character stuff in this book, and that's why I felt more like attached and like what was going on. We didn't really talk about the surveyor a whole lot, but her whole thing is that, you know, she's kind of becoming paranoid. She thinks that everybody kind of splits off at some point. When the biologist goes to the lighthouse and stuff, she splits from the surveyor because the surveyor is like, I am done with this shit. Somebody's already dead. I want to leave. And the biologist is like, I want to stay and explore. Mm-hmm. Like she doesn't, and that's consistent with the film for sure. But so when the biologist leaves the lighthouse and heads back to base camp, the surveyor is gunning her down.
Yeah, they started blasting. Mm-hmm. And like she was just like not having it. She's like, what the frick did you do to the psychologist?
Yeah.
And she's like, no.
She does not trust the biologist at all.
In my defense, I think the biologist should not have opened with saying, oh, she's dead. I feel like she could have explained a little bit better than that.
He's not great with people is kind of the vibe I got from her.
Okay, that makes sense.
She's not like a good communicator. Yeah.
She's a biology major, not a communications major.
Yeah, exactly. She, you know, what is she, left brain or right brain? She left brain? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of the vibe I got from her. So it just like, I don't know. I could clearly like envision this person. Even though we don't know her.
You probably know somebody like this.
Exactly. Yeah. She seems very much like a person that you know of or whatever, but I think it makes total sense of her not to return home.
Oh, well, what's left for her?
Yeah, literally.
Her parents? No. Her family?
No.
Her
Never
lonely
close
person
to her
that
parents.
She was like, left? No.
Yeah.
There's nothing left for it. And like, people can make homes wherever, where they are, you know?
Exactly. So and I'm curious, like, if she does pop up in the sequels, what that means, what that, like, does she return home or home to the mainland, or like, what's going to happen with that? Are there any other changes you could think of before we move on?
Changes.
Any differences?
Differences. Mm-hmm. What did you think about the, going back just a little bit to like the monsters, because there's one in particular that I wanted to mention. What did you think about like the horseshoe crab thing?
Horseshoe crab.
There's like, she's running, I think, towards or something, like a little bit later in the second half. And like, she's in the reeds of things. And like in the mud, she sees a face.
Oh, I don't remember that.
You remember that?
Yeah.
So this is how I remember it. So she's like running from something. And then she looks down and like something like touches her leg or something or bumps it. And then she looks down and she sees like a human face, like in the mud. And then in that human face, it kind of like flips around, flops around. But it's actually like a horseshoe crab.
Okay.
So it's kind of like.
That sounds familiar now.
Yeah. So it's that one freaked me out more than the dolphin, more than the boar, more than the. What else was there? No, that one kind of freaked me out. Okay. It was a quick one.
I totally forgot about that. But that, I wish, yeah. That would have been an easy addition to the film. Yeah. That's the thing is, like, the creatures that Alex Garland makes up, not even just in this movie, but in his other works, too. It's like, he makes some creepy stuff, looking stuff. And especially in Men. I keep bringing Men up.
I haven't seen that. I'm going to watch it.
We got to watch it. Yeah. I need to see your guys' reaction. But, like... I'm like, he could make some cool looking creatures. Mm-hmm. I want to see a horseshoe crab with a human face. I want to see that now. I'm imagining like a Voldemort looking face on
a like
crab.
On the back of the head?
Yeah, exactly. Alrighty. Tough question. What do you prefer, the book or the film?
Is that really tough?
I mean, really like both, but...
I like both.
Which one
for
would you...
reasons.
Okay, if you couldn't pick up one, if you had to give one, like, you're like, I can't watch this or I can never read this again, which one would you choose? Wait, that was worded weird.
I think I understand what you're trying to say.
If you could never return to one,
I'd much rather go into Area X than The Shimmer.
Okay.
That answers your question.
I think so, yeah. I agree. I just think the film, it's weird because it feels fast. It feels like things happen quickly. Terms of like the journey, like going from one thing to the next.
Yeah.
But that ending, it just like totally ruins the movie for me.
I think on the first time when I watched it, I didn't understand it. I didn't get it. I didn't like it. But after reading the book and going back to the ending of the movie, I understand. I'd like to think I understand it a little bit more. Because it's kind of like, why the frick is she kind of like glowing and like, you know?
She's like, annihilation.
Yeah, that's it. But that's what it is.
Yeah,
because I started looking more into like the actual like physics and stuff behind the, like the term of the annihilation and all that, and it makes sense because it's just it's a conservation of energy, so you have to dispel energy one way or another, either by heat or by light.
Yeah.
So in this case, they chose light. Yeah. Which I thought was kind of weird the first time, but
I was like, I don't know how to describe this, and I was taking notes. I was like, she turns into a blob. She expels light and then becomes a blob. And that was like my notes. I was like, I don't know how. You just have to watch it.
I didn't, however, like the movie the ending part with when she's kind of like has her own doppelganger, her own twin.
We barely talked about that. Yeah. She blows up the doppelganger. That I just felt like that section in particular with her in the doppelganger,
it was too long, right?
Yeah, it just went on for a bit too long, and I was just at that point I really checked out. Once she gets to the lighthouse, all that stuff, I kind of just check out.
Yeah, I didn't particularly like it. It felt a little bit like anticlimactic.
Mm-hmm. And knowing it's just an alien, I'm like, that's just not like scary to me. That's not creepy to me.
No.
We've had alien stories before.
Yeah.
And much better alien stories. So that's just not like, I'm trying to think. The Thing is, you know, one that we potentially were going to cover. That's an alien, but like, that's
arguably also a love story.
True. Alrighty.
Yeah.
This versus that. Area X versus The Shimmer. I think I know your answer.
No, yeah, Ariag.
Yeah, the name is so much better than the Shimmer. The Shimmer is like, silly. Why would you change it to the Shimmer?
I don't like. You know what the Shimmer looked like? And it reminded me of just a bubble, like one of the soap bubbles.
Okay. Yes, like a rainbow. Yeah.
Like iridescent.
Rainbow Road.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Tower versus the Lighthouse. That one's a bit more tough.
I didn't like how they referenced to the Tower. It grew on me, but I didn't.
You agreed with everybody else in the crew, like, that's a dumb name. We're not calling it the Tower.
Yeah, I'm just like, it's an upside down tower. It's like going down.
Yeah.
That's a tunnel.
Yeah. I like Bunker, but I get why that's not as, like, I don't know, appealing to write, like, Bunker.
Oh, speaking of the Bunker, you were speaking about it earlier, about how they had the crawler, like, scrawling the inscriptions. Mm-hmm. What if they were writing, like, DNA?
DNA?
Yeah, because, you know, deoxyribonucleic acid?
Mm-hmm.
It uses 3-4 of the Emerson phone a friend. it uses nucleic acids. So it's G, T, A, and C, I believe. And I don't know why I keep thinking of the tower as being a spiral.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, I'm just like, all right, there's something there with the spiral and it writing and inscribing things. Similar to like how a DNA strand is like a double helix, you know, and it kind of spirals down. There's something there. Someone else finished that thought.
I need to look up what people think about the crawler, because how does it know these words? Was it maybe the lighthouse keeper's, like, maybe the lighthouse keeper was very knowledgeable and like these are the words that are...
I don't think it's a lighthouse keeper, even though it says that like it has a space and everything. I don't think so. Because there's lots of other things that take, it kind of absorbs and like mishmashes things from its environment. So if the tunnel is kind of like the opposite of the lighthouse, it would make sense for that thing to take influence or absorb a little bit from the lighthouse keeper.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take.
I guess I just thought it made sense because what we know of the lighthouse keeper, and again, this is like stuff that's mentioned, but like, I'm also I'm trying to put into words like how it's described, but
like
it's
the biologist right now.
I think I vaguely remember her saying something about the lighthouse keeper maybe have been there from the beginning, but that could just be her inference.
Yeah,
or you know what I mean.
Yeah,
inference. But like she could have just been. It could be a theory. Like that the lighthouse keeper was one of the few people there and maybe affected.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I'm getting the film and the book mishmash, but we know the lighthouse is where things started.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of spread there. I know that's in the film.
In the film, yes. In the book, I have no idea.
Yeah, okay. I don't remember then. So to me, I'm like, oh, it makes sense that like the lighthouse keeper, you know, might have been one of the first people infected, and maybe it became the crawler, and then the crawler has been making the things, making the creatures.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, things are coming from the tower, like the doppelgangers, and it's spreading its influence. It's literally writing out ideas for, like, what could exist. That's how I took it.
You know how they're going to solve it in the book?
Hmm.
They're probably going to bomb it.
You think they're going to bomb Ariax?
They're going to bomb it. Mm. No, they're going to bomb the either the tower or the lighthouse. Or
Yeah.
I think so.
I'm really curious to see like how it concludes. If it does conclude. Part of me is like, do I want it to conclude? Do I want answers? It's like I want answers, but
thing.
I don't want
That's
answers. Yeah. Yeah. I like theorizing, but also I don't want things explained. What do you prefer? And this is like book versus movie.
Okay.
So do you prefer the book? The crawler in the book, like that creature, entity, whatever it is, or the doppelganger thing from the film, like the one that's mimicking Lena's actions.
Oh, the one that just at the end? No. By far the crawler.
Okay.
I thought you were going to take this a different direction. Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say the crawler versus like the bear or something.
Oh, no. Because I was like imagining humanoid,
comparing
humanoid creatures. Yeah.
But even then, I don't consider the crawler as that humanoid.
Yeah.
Do you?
I mean, how I had to envision it, because as a human, I have to imagine something.
Yeah.
I can't just imagine nothing like it's trying to describe. I literally imagined it like this, like just
like
an
impression
sitting
of the crawler.
Yeah. Just sitting there, and then words are sprouting on the walls.
What?
That's how I imagined it.
That's crazy. What?
What did you imagine then?
Very different things.
What?
Everson, you play Fallout. You know those little centaur things? Centaurs are like, that walk kind of like walruses and have little things. Anyways, you know starfish?
Do I know what a starfish is?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know how in the book she mentioned the starfish?
No. Wait.
She mentioned that she was like on like looking at the tide pools or something, and then she's like,
oh yeah, when yeah. she was on her field, like one of her work trips. Yeah.
I don't. Okay, you're making me doubt myself, but I'm gonna go super confident. She described a starfish like right before that segment with the crawler.
Uh-huh.
So that I took that as like, oh, maybe he's like a starfish, like, but just like a giant oversized starfish.
With
like
this a bunch is what of you're cilia. Imagining for Fallout. Looks yeah. like a walrus.
That's like that, but throw in a little bit of starfish and then throw in a little bit of lighthouse.
I'm wondering how people drew no, because I was like, yeah, I was imagining like humanoid, and that's why the lighthouse, it being like the lighthouse guy, made sense to me.
No, that made no sense to me at all.
What?
Like, no, because it has to be a starfish. Yes. Imagine a giant starfish with, because do you know what cilia are?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So in biology, they're little tiny microorganisms, right? The way they move around in their environment is through things that are like little hairs.
Okay.
Little things called cilia.
She's licking the straw. I'm sorry.
You just want to drink?
I'm trying to like focus on.
I'm going to talk to Joy. Joy.
Did she actually lick the top? No, she's not. Okay. She's learning. She's becoming human.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, she's cute.
You imagine a starfish? Yes.
So cilia are the way, it's like, you know how humans have legs and stuff to walk around?
Yeah.
Microorganisms have cilia to move around.
Mm-hmm.
So a starfish has something kind of similar. You ever seen the bottom of a starfish?
Mm-hmm.
It has like those little tiny little like
hairs. Things, yeah.
So I imagine the crawler as like a giant starfish with a bunch of those kind of like around it. And that's why it's crawling. And then I imagine, and then with the face of like the lighthouse keeper.
Okay.
Like, something like that. Like a big old blob thing. Like
wow.
A giant slug.
Yeah, this is the experience in reading the book. You can have two totally different
visions. That's like two different
like versions. Yeah. I don't know. I guess nobody knows it's constantly changing. Even the character doesn't know what it's supposed to look like.
That's the thing, though, too. That pissed me off.
Why?
It's like, oh, it's constantly changing.
Oh, you wanted like...
I want a description. You're a biologist,
you
for goodness sake.
I thought you didn't want answers.
I wanted some answers. No, I don't need all the answers. I don't need to know their favorite color or like where they like their hobbies. But I do like it.
If you want a fun time, go on r/southernreach. This is somebody's impersonation.
There's a whole subreddit
or Yeah, there's a subreddit.
I'm a dive deep into that.
This is someone's interpretation of the color.
Of the what?
This is someone's interpretation of it.
That's wild.
That looks like an Adventure Time character.
It does.
I'm very intrigued to see what people think.
I'm happy to find out that there's a subreddit and there's a lot of people that
Yeah, I've been going on there. Yeah.
I'm going to go on there and just make wild claims and be like, the crawler is actually the starfish from Suicide Squad.
I could see that. The big eye.
The big one, right?
Yep.
The big eye.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I imagine.
Yeah. Alrighty, so those were all my this versus that's.
Cool.
Join me next episode. I have some more guests. I have some other guests joining me for next episode. I'm not gonna explain what we're covering because it's too complicated. So, watch Cabin in the Woods and then join us for next episode. Follow us on @DreadfulDigestPod on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. And yeah, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for joining me, Guillermo.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Bye.